Hello and welcome to episode 105 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I'm Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grunislav, and with me, as always...
Hello, I'm Ben Chandler, also known as Ben 304. I wasn't sure what order I wanted to say my two different names in that time. I had to really stop and go, which takes preference? I think it's a sign of maturity that I used my real name first.
It's good to have options. Yeah, I suppose it is.
It is.
Don't you usually?
You can spice it up. Yeah. I don't know what I do. I can't be held accountable for what I say and do.
Yeah, hopefully not. How are you doing, Ben? It's been, it's been a while since we podcasted. What a surprise!
I've been busy the last few weeks, and you have too, which we'll talk about later. But but other than that, you know, I've got a cup of tea, life's, you know, peaceful and relaxed. I'm about to come and visit you in snowy New York City.
You are.
So that'll be fun.
Better get some boots.
No,
seriously, like, there's still snow on the ground, and it's supposed to snow more tomorrow, so you're definitely going to need, like, some proper footwear if you have...
Yeah, I told you we can figure that out once I get there.
Yeah, okay. We'll have our first stop from the airport will have to be the boot shop.
Well, I'll bring shoes. I'm not going to wear, like, canvas sneakers in snow.
Okay.
I'm not silly.
Okay, good. Because I made the mistake of wearing... I can talk about this a little later, but I made the mistake of wearing my suede flat-soled shoes in the snow a few weeks ago, and that was not a fun experience. Anyway.
I remember you bought suede flat-soled shoes to Australia once that you just got not long, and they didn't last 3 weeks. They're, like, broken before the end.
Oh, yeah. It's that same pair of shoes, but they're not broken.
Well, that's the sole was pulling away from the thing.
Yeah, well, that seems to have stopped happening, so...
Well, not if the snow's being allowed in.
Well, I haven't noticed that it's happened anymore, so...
Okay. I think you should buy a higher quality pair of shoes, perhaps.
Oh, I know. I have a nice pair of snow boots. So, I just... Anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, if your pair of suede shoes is pulling apart and letting snow in and stuff, maybe you should buy some nicer shoes.
Yeah, I will if my shoes are falling apart any further. Anyway, welcome to the Blue Cup Shoes podcast.
Yes, it is us. Blue suede shoes. You know I like Elvis.
You do like Elvis. Piano! Anyway. So how have you been? What have you been up to the past few busy weeks since the beginning of February, I suppose, was the last time. Oh, happy St. Patrick's Day, by the way.
Thank you, and also happy St. I don't know anything about St. Patrick's Day.
Well, St. Patrick's Day is actually a pretty big thing here in New York. They have a big parade in Manhattan. So Manhattan's best avoided today. Although I'm going into the city this afternoon to meet up with somebody, so I'm breaking my own rule.
But I know St. Patrick's Day here is an excuse for people that think nothing about Ireland for the rest of the year to get drunk and wear green.
Oh, sure.
But other than that,
that's basically, that's basically what it is here too. And like in places like Chicago, they like dye the river green and I don't know. It's basically
what did they used to dye it? Because that doesn't sound
food coloring, I guess. I don't know. Something non-toxic, I would hope. But yeah, there's a window of two, it's funny because there's a window of two drinking holidays with Easter right in the middle. So you have your...
What? Easter's a drinking holiday?
No. Easter's in the middle of the two drinking holidays is what I'm saying. If you're like a hardcore religious zealot who thinks that Easter is, well, you don't have to be a hardcore religious zealot, but if you're like into the religious significance of Easter over it being just an excuse to eat chocolate bunnies and eggs.
So if you observe Lent, I guess.
Although doesn't Lent started already. Mardi Gras was during GDC. So
I don't know much about Easter either, being banned from Easter as a child.
Oh, right. Yeah, no, Fat Tuesday was on the 28th, and then Ash Wednesday was on March 1st, so Lent starts then. So if you've given up alcohol or anything for Lent, then you're not allowed to participate in St. Patrick's Day.
Well, that would be obvious. Well, I mean, you can participate in St. Patrick's Day in other ways, I'm sure.
That's
I don't
true.
Think the way it's traditionally observed is by just getting drunk, is it?
No, well, I mean...
He's going, hey, we don't have to work, let's drink.
Well, every holiday's kind of been perverted into some sort of terrible thing these days, hasn't it? I mean, you know...
That's a welcoming thought.
Christmas is all about, like, commercialism, and the dark side of Christmas is about commercialism, and, like, the bad side of Easter is... Is you know,
what
chocolate bunnies and Easter egg hunts
like
and
chocolate.
Things. Well, yeah, but I mean, if you know, some people are offended about the fact that the religious holiday has been changed to be about commercialism or whatever. I don't know.
I'm sorry to hear that. They
I'm sorry to hear it too.
It's very good.
They should. And they should play a game, a fun game about holidays, where you get to beat up all the mascots from different holidays called Ocean Spirit Dennis's Holiday Havoc, which I made many years ago.
You had me until the word fun.
Anyway,
I'm
what
sorry,
I was
that
saying...
Was very, that was very impolite of me.
Oh, please. Like that's any different from
I know, it's
your
powerful,
normal...
of course,
exactly.
Here on the Blue Cup Tools podcast.
Yes. Anyway, yeah, so what I was saying was, today's St. Patrick's Day, which is generally considered to be a drinking holiday, and then you've got Easter in April, and then in May, you've got Cinco de Mayo, which is basically white people's excuse to say, Hooray, Mexico! And drink tequila. So, yeah. You've got two drinking holidays where people claim affinity for a culture they... probably know really nothing more about, nothing much about, and then
it does seem as if people will happily appreciate another culture if appreciating that culture allows them to drink to great excess.
Yeah. Man, I'm grumpy today. I think it's all this political stuff.
No, I think that's maybe the solution we need for the sort of, you know, the problems in the world.
What, you think we need more holidays that are devoted to just being a certain nationality for a day and then drinking?
Well, I mean is that if we see that, you know, accepting other cultures means that we get to drink or do the things we like doing, which is obviously drinking a lot for a lot of people in return, then maybe we'd be more accepting.
Jesus, Max, you don't even drink.
It's true, but... But what I'm trying to do is trying to look at it from an objective viewpoint and take the opinion of someone that maybe does like drinking and doesn't like other cultures and thinks, oh, hey, but those people let me drink on a, you know, Wednesday or whatever they get.
So
they
should we declare it a Bogan Day and then everyone drinks 4X or VB?
You honestly don't need an excuse to get Australians drinking because of Australian culture. That's just Australian culture.
Well, I'm saying a holiday that can be celebrated in the United States because Australia, I mean, America doesn't really think about Australians very much.
Well, you did when we had Steve Irwin, I think. I think he was
kind of.
Yeah,
but
no,
he had...
I think it's like, yeah. If you guys found out that, hey, Australia's this great country and a lot of people drink far too much for their own health and social health, you'd probably go, hey, we like them even more than, you know.
Well,
yeah, but that's the problem. Is that
I found out that... Sorry.
People would probably then start to judge countries on, does their holiday let us drink more? You know, the African holiday lets us drink more than the Chinese holiday, so Africa's better and stuff like that. You know, there's always going to be a competition. There's no solution. Let's give up.
You're right. All right, let's move on from this dark, terrible theme. Yeah, so how have you been? What have you been up to?
Oh, I'm fine, thank you. I helped organize a radio. That was pretty good.
Cool.
That was a lot of work, you know, so that took up a lot of my free time, but now I have free time again, and
that's
I'm
good.
Using it to come and visit you.
Oh, good.
So and everybody else.
Yes.
Well, not everybody else in the United States, that's millions of people, but you know what I mean.
I do know.
That will take longer than a year.
Yeah.
but yeah, I've been, you know, I enjoy the music side of the road. I don't like the cow stuff much, you know, that's not the thing, but to get to play to a large crowd of cowboys is pretty fun. Yeah, that's pretty good, and I've been working away on Unavowed with Dave, which has been pretty good, and some other stuff, and you know, we got a few AGS awards, which was nice.
Oh yeah, there was the AGS
awards. I don't necessarily
awards.
Agree with a couple of the awards that I got, but I'm humbled and grateful.
You got two awards. Does that mean you don't agree with either of them?
That's correct. but you know, I'm humbled to have, you know.
You know, I read someone on Twitter say that people should stop saying that they feel humbled by things. That you should just suck it up and accept your praise. And as someone who has a really hard time accepting compliments, that was good advice. So perhaps you should take that advice as well.
Well, I've heard someone say whatever the fuck I want.
You what? you cut out there.
Yeah, right? I was just saying that I heard someone on Twitter say that I can say whatever the hell I want. So
I see.
I'll proceed to do that. What's wrong with being humbled by something?
I guess it's one of those things where if too many people do it too much, it kind of loses its effect or its meaning or whatever.
Look, here's the thing. If somebody says to me, oh, look, your work looks nice, I won't disagree with them because that's ridiculous. That's their opinion.
Sure.
But in a more objective thing like, oh, this game looks, you know, this game beat this game for this thing, I think I'm allowed a bit of a say there.
I guess, yeah.
You know, I don't want to...
But at the same time,
I'm grateful or anything like that.
At the same time, people's opinions on the games are completely subjective, and those subjective opinions are what lead to people voting and declaring it better than another game. So
that's absolutely true. But I'm allowed to be humbled by that subjective opinion, surely.
Yeah, of course. Anyway, good.
Like I said, I don't want to make a big deal out of it or anything else like that. But yes. You know. The competition was very strong, and I was shocked.
I agree. I was happy that we got best writing, so that, yeah.
It's good.
Anyway, please continue.
Oh, that's about it. You know, I've been making preparations to travel, which takes a bit of planning, not too much. The fact that I've done it before is helpful. You know,
yes.
Got all my documents together. Mm.
Your little dossier. You know, documents.
I do have. Well, I have a binder
full of women.
What?
Sorry, that was a political joke from about 5 years ago. Never mind.
An American political joke, no doubt.
Yes, it was.
That's the two reasons I don't get it.
Yeah, basically Mitt Romney, when he was running for president, he made a comment at one point about, like, they were talking about how he didn't really know any women, and he's like, what are you talking about? I have, there's binders of full of women in my thing, and like, he was talking about how he had a big directory of women, and he used the phrase binders full of women, and that became like a funny political thing. You know, back when saying stupid shit actually got you in trouble. Anyway...
A sense of political undercurrent running here.
Hush! Well, continue!
Well, by undercurrent, I mean current. It's not really under.
Swim, little fishy.
I've had
sugar this morning, can you tell? Toughness.
I've got stuff on my phone, like games on my phone to play on the long plane journey.
Good.
Hopefully I'm on one of those planes that allows you to charge your telephone.
Oh, yeah, those are handy.
That's pleasant.
Yeah, I didn't have that luxury on the planes that I took recently. However, I did have it on the bus, which was kind of strange.
I've never seen it on the bus. That's interesting.
Yeah. Greyhound has... not to plug Greyhound, because they suck. I can talk about that in a little while. But, the Greyhound bus actually had outlets, whereas JetBlue does not. But JetBlue does have free Wi-Fi.
When you say outlets, do you mean USB or do you mean AC power?
Outlets, I mean... AC power.
Oh, wow. I'd like a plane. I've never been on a plane with that. Only USB outlets. I'd love that because then I could use my laptop.
I've been on a couple of planes that have AC power outlets.
Maybe I'll be lucky this time.
Maybe. Are you flying Qantas?
Well, I mean, I am lucky. I get to fly to another country
yes.
and catch up with people. That's lucky enough. I don't need any more than that.
Yeah, well, really. I mean, yeah. No. Are you taking your DS?
I am taking my DS, yes. I got to make sure it's fully charged before I get on that plane.
Yes, you do. Objection. Anyway.
Yeah. So you know, I'm just about all set. It's my father's 60th birthday party tomorrow.
Oh,
so
happy birthday, Eric.
I have to wrap his present tonight. I got him tools, which is such a dad present, but I know if I get him anything other than tools, it will never get touched. So I always get him, you know, tools or clothing because he's a dad and he...
Are they blue cup tools?
No.
Oh, well.
Sorry. But, you know, he's a farmer, so to him, tools are the best,
sure,
the most useful gift. But, yeah, and then I'm going to head down to the city, catch up with a friend in the city, and have a meal, and then...
Get on a plane for 30 hours.
Yeah, leave on a jet plane.
Yep.
And that's about it. I don't really have a lot to talk about. I haven't really been playing any games. I've finished a couple of games, but we'll obviously talk about that later. But yeah, when that gets busy, it's very busy, especially because we organize our own events, and that's a lot.
Yeah.
So yeah, life's been quiet. What about you? You've been to GDC. We all know that.
I have been to GDC. That's what I'm going to mainly talk about this podcast. But
I know that's how people know it, because that's going to be the title of the podcast.
Yes, you're right. Maybe I'll do one of those obscuring the topic things where I'm just like, episode 105, wah, 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 and then not actually say anything.
I don't want to blow my own horn.
Too late.
Okay, I do want to do that. But yeah, I don't want to blow my own horn, but I do feel like I'm...
Yes.
In this case.
Like you're what?
I wonder if I'll get you again this time. I got you good last time.
What did you do? You kind of cut out when you said, I don't want to blow my own horn, but I blanked out this time. We seem to have a little bit of an issue with you cutting out this episode.
I'm not sure how to solve that.
Just talk. Let's just repeat yourself over and over again until we know what you're saying.
I do anyway.
That's true. Anyway, wait, when did you get me last time? What did you do?
I am more of a trickster.
Oh, you are more of a trickster. But how did you trick me last time? I don't remember.
When I arrived in New York both times.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, I can't do that this time, because last time I was quite happy to be seen sneaking around the airport. But this time I'm fearful. I don't want to be deported.
Well, this time around I'm not meeting you at the airport, so I have countermeasures. Well,
I don't want to sneak around the train station either.
I have countermeasures in place to make sure that... See, you're coming into territory that I'm familiar with, so I know exactly how to avoid being snuck up on by you. So,
but you were familiar with at the airports, and I was hiding behind columns and stuff. I thought,
I wasn't familiar with the airports. I haven't waited for anyone, and I don't know where you come out from those areas in the airport. That's why I didn't know where you were.
Oh, well, you stood right at the place where you said, oh, this is where the people come out.
It is, but you didn't come out from the place where all the other people came out. You found odd alternate paths both times.
But you just said to me that you don't know where the people come out, and then you said that you were standing where the people were coming out. I'm finding it hard to trust you.
I thought I knew where the people came out, but you proved me wrong.
Well, everyone else came out of those.
Yeah, I don't know how you split from the group. I'm curious. I'm really curious to see, because where I'm going to meet you only has one possible way for you to come out that I know of. So if you manage to somehow find another way, I think you would have to like go down the other way, go outside, come back inside, come back around, and then I don't doubt your commitment. I know that you would probably do that given the opportunity to be able to stand behind me for 10 minutes. Well, did I tell you the truth, though?
Well, I know your address. I can just wait at your apartment for you when you get home after 7 hours of waiting. Like, man, and where is he?
7 hours of waiting. You get in at 4:30. I'm not going to wait around until 11:30 at night.
I'm a little sad that you're not that committed to waiting for me. I honestly feel like it's time to move on.
I owe it. It was time to move on like 10 minutes ago. So, yeah, what have I been up to? Well, like you said...
I'm not even meant to be talking much this episode because it's your stuff. I should be quiet.
I mean, come on. So, yeah, I went to GDC, but I also, before that, I went to Nevada for a week. 5 days, really. And between then, did I do anything? No, not really. I've kind of been doing
some... working.
Yeah, just working and stuff, and trying to get Lamplight City along, and it's been going slower than I would have liked, but that's game design for you, or game development for you.
It always takes longer, doesn't it?
It always does, yeah. I wanted to have a fully playable alpha ready by GDC, but that did not happen, so it still hasn't happened. So, yeah. Anyway, I've also been doing some freelance stuff here and there. And I'm doing some voiceover work as well, which is fun. So, yeah, I went to Nevada because it was my 3-year anniversary with my lovely girlfriend Jess, and she has Oh, thank you. She has an aunt and uncle that live out in Yerington, Nevada, and she's been wanting to visit them as kind of a bookend to the GDC trip for the last couple of years we've been to GDC. And this year, since GDC was so early, it started on the 27th of February. Usually it's in March. Actually, they already announced the dates for next year, and it's late March next year. But since it was so early this year, and our anniversary just so happens to be on February 22nd, we decided that we were going to visit her aunt and uncle before GDC and then just get from Reno to San Francisco via bus. So we flew out to Nevada on the Tuesday before GDC, and we hung out there, and it was nice. I put a bunch of pictures on Twitter. There was some nice desert views. It made me think of Red Dead Redemption. It was cold and snowy in certain parts of the mountains. It's interesting how the terrain changes so quickly. Like, they live in a valley, so the valley is nice and flat, and you see all the mountains around. And then if you drive into the mountains, it changes quite significantly. But yeah, it was cool. I hadn't been in Nevada since I went to Las Vegas when I was 16. So that was nice. And I had never been to, obviously, northern Nevada, because Vegas is like right on the bottom little tip of it. So yeah, it was cool. Got to go to Lake Tahoe and see snow next to a beach, which was really
interesting. That's a very famous lake.
Yes, it is. And it's a very scenic lake too. I got to see some horses that one of them farted right after I took a picture with it, and it made me laugh because it was a horse and it farted. And it was one of those.
I remember when I was very young, I went to a family friend's farm for a pony ride, and the pony farted every step that it took. Then it was just like.
Yes, you've told me this story.
And it was the funniest thing that's ever happened to me in my entire life.
This was funny because I was like, ooh, a horsey. And I stood in front of it and I got a picture taken with it. And as soon as I walked back, I looked over at it and I saw its tail flutter in the breeze, and it went. And I was like, oh, that's wonderful. But the thing that freaked me out the most was when you walked up to the shore of the lake, it was sand, obviously, because it's a lake and it's got a sandy shore. And then there was the water, but 2 feet into the sand, there was just a line of snow. So it was really weird for me, you know, having grown up in South Florida and being used to, you know, being at the beach when it's hot outside and when it's nice warm weather, to see a sandy beach next to some water with some snow. I mean, granted, it's cold outside, but still, seeing that, it just confused me. So I picked up the snow and I made snowballs and I threw several snowballs into the lake and screamed, "Damn you, nature! Why must you trick me?" Or something like that.
Seems a little aggressive, but okay.
Well, I mean, throwing snowballs is fun. You might get to experience that fun when you're here. Anyway.
I hope we get to make a snowman. I've always wanted to make a snowman.
Yeah,
a snow person. It's 2017.
You're right. Making a snowman or snow sculptures is pretty fun. The first time I did it was the first time I saw snow, actually, in Canada, back when I was 14 or so. Yeah, it's fun. That's usually best done after a fresh snowfall, though, because the way the snow is right now, it's all compacted and brushed to the side and dirty and icy and hard. So.
Kelsey showed me a photo of a snowman near her upstate, and someone had used what looked like a flower pot to sculpt a nice fez for the man's head. And it was I admired his fez. It was a very nice design.
That's actually a good idea. I remember I used to, it's when I made sandcastles with buckets. That's a good idea.
Similar to that, yes.
Yeah, I made a sandman once.
Hmm.
It wasn't quite the same.
I remember you made a sand crocodile.
I did. I made sand sculptures in Australia. That's right.
You did. Well, I was swimming with a sea lion.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. You were swimming with a sea lion and snorkeling. That was in Seabird. And yeah, I made sand sculptures for you to appreciate when you came out of the water.
Mm, that was good.
Yeah. Anyway, so what else did I... Oh, right. So I went to a Basque restaurant while I was in Nevada, which was interesting because apparently there's some significant Basque population in that area because there are several Basque restaurants in both Yerington and the area around it. This was a little place called Gardnerville and also in Reno. So that was interesting. Okay. I had a lot of steak while I was in Nevada, but I mean, it makes sense, I guess.
Well, we had a funny conversation the other day when we were talking about death, which is my favorite form of comedy, as you know. And, yes. And I sort of laughed at the fact that I was going to live longer than you because I eat more vegetables. And I said, when was the last time you ate a vegetable? And you said, I think it was GDC.
Yeah.
Which is, I hate to nag, but you should eat more vegetables, Francisco.
I know, Grandma.
Yeah. I mean, I eat vegetables every day, unless I'm holidaying with you.
I'm such a bad influence.
You are. Every time every time we spend time trekking about and that sort of thing, I'm like, Jesus, man, I feel like it's been ages since I've eaten real food, and then I realize that that is the truth.
You turn into a nymphomaniac.
That's correct.
Because you haven't had your veggies.
That's the thing. The lack of vegetables does incredible things, which makes me understand and sympathize and empathize with your normal position in life.
Okay, fair enough. Anyway, I also shot a gun, a big sniper rifle. Well, not a big one. It was only 22 caliber, but still.
Yeah, 22 caliber is not a sniper. 22 caliber is what I learned to shoot when I was 12.
Well, excuse me, Mr. Bushman.
A telescopic sight does not make it a sniper rifle. That's just a sight. I'm sorry.
It's fine. It makes a better story.
Your adventure.
It makes a better story if I say it was a sniper rifle.
Oh, yeah, it sounds badass.
Yeah, it's really not. Anyway, yeah, I've shot a gun, y'all. I'm a real man now. I don't know where that came from. Yeah, and Jess also shot, and she kept our target, which I thought was amusing because she had this target in her suitcase. And I was like, you better be careful. The customs people don't, or not the customs people because we were flying domestic, but I was like, you better be careful. The TSA people don't freak out about that. But they
don't
didn't.
They like guns?
They thought, not on airplanes.
Yeah, but that's not a gun. It's just a target. I thought your country likes them. Like, if you took if you took a Koran onto a plane, they'd probably shoot you. But a gun, no, they're fine.
Yeah, probably. Anyway.
Sorry, that's a bit of... politics aren't my thing.
No, we're very angrily political this time.
Yeah, gun targets, fine. Books, no.
Yes, exactly. Anyway, so yeah, that was fun. And then we had to take the bus. And we had originally booked a Megabus, but Megabus canceled. We were supposed to leave on Sunday at 3:30 p.m. And Megabus sent me an email on Saturday morning saying, "We're sorry, but your journey has been canceled due to weather." Now, when we got into Nevada on Tuesday, there was a big blizzard happening, which was kind of surprising that we were even able to land in that blizzard because it was a pretty significant blizzard. So much so that apparently the only two highways out of Nevada into California, one of them had been closed and the other one had partially collapsed and had been reduced to a one-lane highway.
My goodness.
Yeah, they don't mess around up there with the snow. And the problem is that the weather is apparently really unpredictable too because of the terrain. So, yeah, we were really lucky in that we had really nice weather the whole time we were there, but then they started saying that there might be a big storm over the weekend. So I was getting a little worried because I thought if there's a big storm and a lot of snow falls and they close the highways, that's going to impact our trip to GDC, and I need to get to GDC by Tuesday morning because I'm contractually obligated to give this talk that I'm scheduled to give at GDC. So I, I was a little concerned, but then as the week went on and I kept checking the forecast indicated that it would be sunny. And the news reports, the news reports started saying that the weekend was going to be sunny and that there was the possibility for a snowstorm to come in late Sunday evening. And the real snowfall was going to be like on Monday, the following Monday, once we were already out of GDC. Or right, once we were already out at GDC, I should say. So I was a little confused as to why Megabus would have jumped the gun and canceled so early on. But
I wonder if because they had to reschedule buses for other passengers' earlier trips and they didn't have a bus to take your trip.
Maybe. Either that or the cynic in me figured that they probably just didn't have enough passengers on the bus, so they figured they would just cut their losses and cancel the trip.
Mm.
Anyway, it's hard to know. Yeah, it is. So Saturday morning was spent in a bit of a concerned effort to find alternate means of travel into California. So at first I booked a rental car. And when I told Jess's aunt and uncle, they were like, oh, that's not really a good idea because if it does snow, you're going to have to get chains and it's going to be a big hassle and this and that. And I was like, yeah, I guess you're right. So they were like, are there any other buses? And I said, I actually didn't check. Let me look. So I looked at Greyhound. Yeah, well, I figured that other buses would be expensive. Megabus is kind of known for being the cheaper option. So I looked at Greyhound and it turned out that Greyhound had a fare to San Francisco. I mean, it wasn't a direct trip because it made stops in Sacramento and Oakland beforehand, but it was about the same amount of time, and it was, I think it was maybe an hour more, and it was about the same amount of money, so it was it was only like 20 bucks, so it wasn't so bad. So I said, all right, good, problem solved, we'll just take a Greyhound, and this one leaves at 1 p.m., which is earlier than our previous 3:30 departure, so we should be getting into San Francisco by 6:40 p.m. That's plenty of time to get into our hotel and get settled and have some dinner and have a nice relaxing evening before the insanity of GDC starts. Next year, by the way, if I go to GDC, I think we should go on Saturday because I think you need a little bit more time to prepare before the insanity starts. But anyway, to make a very long story kind of short, Sunday came. And we got to Reno at 11 a.m. to have plenty of time to hang around and have time to get on the bus. And at the Greyhound station, there was all these people lined up. We got our tickets and we went off and came back at 1 o'clock. And at 1 o'clock, there was still a line. And we learned that apparently the bus that had been scheduled previous to the 1 o'clock bus, which was the 11:30 bus, we actually had asked if there was space on that bus, but it was sold out. That bus, the driver had never shown up. So they were loading these people into the bus that was supposed to leave at 1 o'clock in order to get them off on their now delayed trip. So we were trying to figure out where the 1 o'clock bus was supposed to wait. And then they said, oh, we have some standby seats on this bus after all. Let's see if you can get on. And they let us on, but the two people ahead of Jess and I were the last ones available on, or last ones to get extra seats. So they cut off and they said, all right, never mind. So we had to get off the bus again. So then we had to wait for the 1 o'clock bus to decide to load, which it did at about 1:30 or so. So we loaded up on the bus. We got all our luggage on the bus. We sat on the bus. I was finally relaxed and ready to go. The bus driver gets on the bus and makes her pre-bus leaving announcement. And then all of a sudden she decides to get on her cell phone and then she gets off the bus and then she comes back on the bus and she says, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry, but the bus doesn't reverse. And everyone's like, what? So she says, well, I can't get into this other bus that's parked over here that's the next scheduled bus. So we're gonna have to wait until the next bus driver arrives, and I'm gonna ask him if we can take this bus, and if he lets us, then we'll go on this next bus. But if not, we might have to wait up to 3 hours. And everyone's like, what? Including myself, I was freaking out because I was like, you know, this is really ridiculous. We were supposed to leave at 1. At this rate, if we're going to end up leaving at 3, you know, past the proposed time, the last thing I want to happen is that we leave late and all of a sudden the storm comes in and we get stuck halfway through and they close the pass and we can't get through because of weather. And that would be really annoying. Also, I found out that the reason Megabus actually likely canceled was because they have double-decker buses and it's windy in the mountains and they are afraid that the bus is going to get blown over, yeah. So anyway, luckily the other driver showed up and we were able to get on the other bus, but they had to fill out all the paperwork all over again, apparently, and then they had to transfer all the luggage from underneath the original bus onto this new bus, which took another hour and a half for some reason. So we didn't end up actually leaving until about 3:30, which was the time we were supposed to originally leave on the Megabus. But while we were waiting, someone came to do a temporary repair on the bus, and it reversed and pulled out and left, and everyone on the bus started freaking out and accusing the driver of being lazy and not wanting to do her job. And just trying to get at, yeah, they were having a field day with screaming at her. And there was also a big group of Australians on the bus who I felt bad for because they were trying to get to San Francisco in order to make their flight back to Australia, which left at 10:30 p.m.
Oh, so, man, that's really last minute.
Yeah, so, I mean, we got into San Francisco at 8:30, so they hopefully still made it to the airport okay, because it doesn't take too long to get from downtown San Francisco to the airport, but still.
Mm, it's very late, though.
Yeah, but anyway, so we finally were on our way at about 3:30, and we made it through the pass, and I was happy. And then we got to Sacramento, and then she took a wrong turn off the freeway, and we got lost, and all the people on the bus were screaming at her because they were mostly from Sacramento, and they were giving her directions and telling her where to turn at every corner. So,
don't bus drivers use GPS there?
I don't know. Maybe. No, I didn't
everybody,
look.
Everybody, even cab drivers here use GPS.
Yeah, I would think so. But everyone was just, yeah, we were towards the back of the bus, so I couldn't see if, you know, she was using anything. So finally we got to Sacramento, and then pretty much everybody got off at Sacramento, which was nice, because then the rest of the journey was nice and quiet. So, yeah. So then we got to Sacramento. So overall, it wasn't a very pleasant Greyhound experience, but we got there in the end, and it was all right.
Okay. It's good to be safe.
Yeah. Now, as for what I've been playing, I was still playing some Psychonauts on PS4 before GDC. I never got around to playing Dishonored 2, which I wanted to play because Kara Ellison, who was on our panel, worked on that, and I wanted to, you know, if it had been nice, I would have said, oh yeah, you did a great job in Dishonored 2. And if it hadn't been, I would have been like, oh, you didn't do such a great job on Dishonored
2. No,
I'm kidding. Yes. However, I did download a game while I was at GDC at the behest of several people I spoke to. Well, really just one person I spoke to. A guy named Pablo, who was very nice. 80 Days. I'm very late to the party on 80 Days, but I downloaded it and I played it, and I've now played it about 7 times through, and I love that freaking game. I'm addicted to it. Like, every time I play it, I discover something new. And it's really
cool.
It's really rich, and it's fun, and it's got a monumental amount of text. I think it has more text than Planescape Torment does.
Gosh, that's a lot.
Yeah, and you don't really... I mean, it's impossible to see it all in one playthrough, let alone 6 playthroughs. I mean, there's 7 playthroughs. Thank you. there's a few cities that are generally... I mean, you kind of encounter them a lot because, like, freaking Singapore. Don't get me started on Singapore. I hate Singapore.
It's all right. We nuked it in Technobabylon. You're fine.
Oh, right. You did, didn't you? Mm. Yeah.
That'll teach them.
Yeah. And Manila. Man, the first time I went to Manila, I got fog, got cholera. It was terrible. But anyway, yeah, 80 Days. If you haven't played 80 Days, you should play 80 Days. Don't be like me and be stupid and not play it for 4 years or however, 3 years, however long it's been out. It's really fun, and it doesn't take that long to play through. Like, one playthrough, you can finish it in, like, 2 hours. So it's a nice... I actually like playing it while traveling on the subway, because I feel like I'm traveling, which
that
I am.
That makes sense.
But just, yeah, not around the world. And the music is really nice, and it's got a really nice steampunk world, which has helped me a lot, because I'm like, oh, this feels really like I finally get it. So that's nice. And yeah, it's got really, really cool. The writing is very cool. And, you know, since it's a choose your own adventure, you get to pick your, your stuff, and you can shape your character as you like. And
that's nice.
And it even has like a market system and an economy thing. And I get great pleasure in finding items that say, this is worth, you know, an exorbitant amount of money in this city. And I'm like, ooh, where's this city? I better make that my next destination so I don't have to go to the bank. So there's a lot of interesting strategies. And yeah, there's a lot of like hidden secrets. I don't want to spoil too much, but the last two times I played, I found some really interesting alternate paths that were different, including an expedition to the North Pole. And my record, that was actually my shortest trip. I made it around the world in 59 days that time because
that's cool.
I cheated and I went over the North Pole instead of going actually around the world.
Well, that's consistent with sort of plane routes now.
Yes, I suppose. I don't know if planes actually fly over the North Pole. Like,
they do.
From... Really?
Yep. I was talking to the drummer of my band the other day, and he was freaking out last time he went to America because he woke up in the middle of his flight and like looked at the GPS and was like, oh my God, we're over the North Pole, we're lost. I was like, yeah, no, they do that now, apparently.
Wow.
It's the shortest way than going around
some
places to
If America. You're going to like London, from London to Winnipeg, which is pretty much what I did, or Calgary, then I guess it would make sense to do that.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
Interesting. The things you learn.
Wah,
but yeah, Inkle, like, I've only played Sorcery, but I really like Sorcery. I like their approach to sort of, they're making the game book choose your own adventure kind of style a mobile thing, and it really works well when you've got the moving graphics. Well, the graphics don't even have to move, honestly, but it really works well because you're not turning to the pages, the game does it for you, and yet it's simple enough to interact with. You're not, you know, a lot of mobile interaction can be a bit underwhelming.
Hmm.
You know, you a lot of the times, but that feels good to me. So yeah, it's cool to see what they're doing.
Well, John Ingold gave a talk at GDC, which I missed, but I watched on the GDC Vault the other night about building an open world in Sorcery and how do you make a quote unquote open world game, in Inkle. And it was really interesting. Like he outlined the generic quest design in most RPGs and how it's usually very linear. Like, you know,
yes,
you'll meet a character, they'll give you a quest, you do the quest, you come back, the character gives you a reward. And how with Inkle, or at least with the format that they're trying to do, they're accounting for other possibilities. Like, why is it that if you go into the village and the peasant tells you that there's a wolf in the woods, why is it that he's the only one in the entire village who tells you about this wolf? Why is it that if you go to that exact spot in the woods before you get the quest, there's nobody there or nothing there? But then as soon as the peasant gives you the quest, you go back and, oh, lo and behold, there's a wolf there. And how that takes you out of the game and makes you realize that it's a game and not an immersive world. So he kind of outlined the ways in which they dealt with that. And there were some pretty clever ways to do that. And I mean, it seems obvious when you hear him talk about it, and you know, but it's really not obvious because obviously people don't really think about that sort of thing.
Well, I think there are traditional forms of interaction that we're not used to looking past at the moment, you know, but yeah, Inkle games are good. And I wonder if you'd enjoy Sorcery as well. I enjoy Sorcery quite a bit.
Hmm. I'm really interested in seeing what they do with their new game, Heaven's Vault, which they...
It looks interesting and quite different.
Yeah, it's a graphic adventure for one thing, and the animation is very reminiscent, or to use your word, is redolent of The Last Express, which is cool.
That's not my word. I didn't invent the word.
You didn't, but you use it a lot.
I like the word.
You do.
I'm fond of it.
Actually, it's funny because I was just playing... I just discovered last night that... Firewatch has been updated to include an audio commentary. And one of the things... I mean, you played Firewatch recently, right?
I did.
Did you talk about it on the last podcast?
I think at one point I forgot, but I played a lot of games.
Yeah.
So I was kind of blitzing through them sort of thing.
Yeah. Well, you and many other people have praised the dialogue in Firewatch, and...
yeah, I love that dialogue.
Yeah. So one of the things that Sean Vanneman, who wrote the bulk of 100% of the game, as he says in the commentary, One little thing that he did that I thought was kind of cool and very subtle was, and this relates to you using the word redolent and me using the word redolent now. He talks about, you know, if there's this really, really shouldn't spoil much if you haven't played Firewatch, but if you have not played Firewatch, what the hell is wrong with you? Go play Firewatch. Towards the end of the first day, as you're making your way back to camp, you encounter a guy with a flashlight who shines the flashlight in your face. And, you know, as the player, you comment to Delilah. There's my heaters going. I hope you like banging noises in the night, by the way, because you're going to be probably hearing a lot of those while you're here.
I'm used to those noises when we room together.
Okay. Well, usually they're coming from you.
I was making innuendo.
I know. I chose to diffuse it by making fart jokes.
Well, both are good.
Yes. Anyway, so yeah, you have this encounter where this guy shines a light at you and you call it in and you talk to Delilah and Henry makes a comment about it. And apparently, they mentioned this in the commentary, there's a very subtle thing that they do where if earlier in the game, if the girls at the lake, if in your interaction with them they call you a creep, Henry will describe the man as a creep. Like, there's a guy creeping around. And the reason he does that is because he says, you know, when people talk to each other, if one person or a group of people talk to each other, if there's a turn of phrase or some word that gets used often enough around, like, people will pick it up. Like, language is very infectious. And so the idea that if people are talking to each other long enough, they'll come up with their own, you know, specific language or turns of phrase or in jokes or things like that. And that's something that he kept in mind when writing the dialogue. And I thought that was really interesting and really cool to do.
It seems a little subtle in that particular example.
But yeah, like, yeah, to do that subconsciously is kind of cool.
Well, or at least to, did it consciously.
Well, what I meant was to plant that subconsciously into the player's mind.
Oh, right. Yes, now I understand.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anything else you've played?
No, but I will talk about GDC now for the remainder of the podcast. As is my yearly tradition. Except I don't think we did it last year, so whatever.
I think I just... Oh, no, I don't know.
No, I don't remember why we didn't anyway. Usually we do like a post GDC wrap up, but that was like in the days when I would come back like on Friday, and I've been coming back on Saturday the last couple of years. So anyway,
because I was out last Friday anyway, we couldn't have done it then.
That's true. So anyway, I
was watching a rock and roll band.
Good. So yeah, GDC was a lot of fun this year, as it is every year. But it was especially fun this year because I actually got to see talks because I went as a speaker, which meant that I got an all-access pass to everything, including VRDC, which, yes, there's a VRDC now, which I had nothing to do with. Because
that's an interesting name.
Yes, interesting is the word. Yeah, so I was really lucky in that I got to see some talks that I really wanted to see, and all of them were really cool. Some highlights were Enon Zur, who is the composer of many games, including Fallout 4 and Fallout 3. Well, all the recent Fallouts.
Including
New Vegas, yes. Mm-hmm. He also actually did the soundtrack to the 2008 Prince of Persia, which I know you played and you hated, but the music's real nice. You have to give it that.
I didn't play enough of it to get a real opinion on it, but the introduction was terrible.
Oh, yes. But the music is nice. The main menu theme in particular I like. Okay. But Enon Zur, he is a nutbag. And I mean that in the highest praise, in the most complimentary way possible. Like, he is what I would describe as a mad genius. He's very, very enthusiastic about his work. He's like an excited puppy when he's on the stage talking about stuff. And he's very, very animated and very fun. Like, I went up and I talked to him afterwards. And he was really funny. Anyway, but his talk was about originality in Fallout 4 music. And he talked about how he approached the... I always find it interesting, even though I'm not a composer or an audio guy in any way, shape, or form, I still enjoy music, and I really like the creative process. So I always like hearing composers talk about what they did to... how they came up with what they came up with. Like when Austin Wintory came and spoke at NYU, and he talked about his process and for Assassin's Creed, and I thought that was really cool. Which, as I pointed out to you, fun fact enough, or fun fact, he used tripod to sing the murder ballads, which was amusing.
Mm. Which you never mentioned to me then. If you had mentioned it to me then, I would be like, oh, I know who Tripod are. I grew up listening to those guys.
Yeah, because I forgot that he said, oh, I know he said that he had worked with these three guys in Australia, but I didn't remember that he had said Tripod, and I had forgotten that you had sent me a link to Tripod's Ghost Ship until you recently mentioned them, and I looked them up, and I was like, oh, that's right, I watched Ghost Ship. Anyway, but Inanzor, he was talking about how, like, he uses these really strange instruments because he considers the world of Fallout to be this alternative world, and how maybe the music that they make in this world, they use unconventional instruments. Like, maybe they smash on guitars and, you know, metal things for their percussion. So he played a few samples and he talked about how he came up with this stuff.
I wonder how much of that stuff is kind of present when you're just playing the game. And, you know, because a lot of the time music's quite a background consideration, at least for me, until you're listening to the soundtrack by itself and you're like, oh, hey, listen to that.
Well, I definitely recognized a few of the pieces he played from wandering around in the wasteland.
But when you had played the game, were you like, oh, that's different, that's interesting, or is it very much a background consideration?
Well, the music of the background wandering around general, like, wasteland music in the Fallout games, especially in 3 and 4, has a specific sound to it. And it never made me think, oh, wow, that's innovative or anything. But it always did sound like it had a very specific... It was identifiable as Fallout music. And that's basically what he was talking about, how he had put his own unique signature on it. Which he did, because if you hear it, you think, okay, this is from Fallout.
Right.
Like, his more technical process about it, or of it, was good. But I loved the music in Fallout 4. I mean, you'll remember that I was, like, going on about a couple of pieces I heard while I was playing it last year when you were here. And I told him about, like, the one, the piece in for the railroad faction with, like, the cool organ. I complimented him on that. He's like, oh, thank you very much! And I was like, wow, this guy's nuts. But I like him. Yeah, that was a fun talk. What else? Let's see. So there was a talk about design remastering, sort of a tech talk on remastering Grim Fandango and Day of the Tentacle, which was cool. And I got to talk to Oliver Fransky afterwards, and... He and I nerded out over adventure games a bit because he had one slide where he had all the covers of all the LucasArts adventure games, and he goes, how many people have played at least two of these games? Raise your hand. And pretty much everyone in the room raised their hands. And he said, how many people have played every single one of these games? And I proudly raised my hand along with about, I would say about a third of the room. And he was like, oh, wow, good. So that was fun too. But yeah, it was good. And my talk was part of a panel. The panel overall was really good. My talk sucked. No, I'm kidding. I watched it and I didn't do as badly as I thought I had done. But,
that's good.
Yeah, the panel was really good. And everybody, I was very lucky in that I got to go first, because if I had had to go, like, last, I would have been freaking out the whole time and not paying attention to what anybody else said, being nervous about having to give my talk. But thankfully, I went first, and I got it over with, and it seemed to go over well with everybody. And everyone else who spoke on the panel was real interesting. Kara Ellison talked about the game she's working on where the water tastes like wine, and how having multiple writers gives each character more opportunity to have a unique voice, which... As you probably know, getting your characters to have unique voices is pretty challenging when you write several characters, especially if you have a lot of them.
Yeah, they end up being reflections of yourself a lot of the time, which is normal.
Yeah, but then if you have a whole bunch of characters who all across the board sound like it's the same person talking, then that...
It's a problem.
It is a problem. So, yeah. And then Greg Heffernan, a.k.a. Cosmo D, who's a real cool guy. You should check out his stuff if you haven't. He was talking about how he uses music in his game, the Norwood Suite. We should probably get Greg on this podcast. He's a cool guy to talk to about audio and music and incorporating stuff. And he's making an adventure game, so... just in Unity.
Sounds like that kind of guy.
Yeah. He was... Unity. It's confusing and I'm afraid of it. That's what it...
Have you used Unity?
No, but I'm afraid of it.
Okay. Well, you're a Luddite. We all know that.
I know. Anyway, yeah.
You were still using Photoshop 6 in like 2013 or something.
I'm still using Photoshop CS2 in 2017, so...
Yeah, and only because I told you could get it for free.
Yeah, which wasn't even true, so... I mean, it's true, but it's not... You know what I mean.
It's anyway, not... I know.
Let's not go there. Anyway, so Emily Short talked about her interactive, interrogation game, and Naveed Kansari talked about his also interrogation game in VR. So everybody had really interesting narrative
innovation. Interrogation games.
Yeah, basically.
You're doing one, they're doing...
yeah. Well, I'm doing one as a detective. They're doing one where, Emily's doing one where you have to talk to a robot, and Naveed's doing one where you're the one being interrogated, and you're in VR, and you have to shake your head or nod to continue the game, which I have been wanting to see in a game, in a first-person game forever, so I'm really happy that someone's actually doing it.
Have you played Virginia?
I have not played Virginia. Didn't you play Virginia recently?
I did. I wonder how you'd find Virginia.
Then how come you didn't talk about how you played Virginia, you emitter?
You never asked. You jumped straight to GDC instead of asking what I've been playing.
I did ask what you've been playing, and you said I haven't really been playing anything.
You did. Well, you jumped straight to GDC. Anyway.
All right, let's jump back. What have you been playing? Tell me about Virginia.
Virginia is really interesting because it's... It has a couple of features that are fascinating, such as unreliable narrative. You're not mm-hmm. quite sure. You know, it doesn't end in a way that wraps anything up. Mm. You know, and it's funny because it creates a formula that you sort of get used to, uh-huh. and then once you've gotten used to that formula, it subverts it in an interesting way. It's very surreal at times. It does everything with no dialogue, which is fascinating, and you know, and quite low res graphics, and yet in a way that I found quite gripping. So yeah, I really enjoyed that about Virginia. It's hard to recommend to someone if they think they're getting an adventure game,
mm-hmm.
because it's not an adventure game.
I heard it's more in the vein of walking simulator or an interactive movie.
Sure, it's less interactive than, say, Firewatch.
Okay.
While being quite similar to, say, Firewatch. It's less interactive than, say, Gone Home, while being in a similar vein to that.
Right.
But it feels directed in a way that those two... Well, Firewatch feels quite directed.
Is it first person or third person?
It is first person.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's... it's. You know, it's one of those games that's going to be divisive, as Gone Home was, as Firewatch was, sure. And I think probably even more divisive than those two.
Mm.
Just because Firewatch and Gone Home tell a pretty straight story once you get to the end of it, mm. whereas this never goes, oh, by the way, this is what it was all about. So, you know, but it's fascinating to see people trying stuff like that, even if you think, oh, that could have been done differently. It's fascinating, you know, and I had to go and read interviews with, you know, the people that made it to see what they thought. And, you know, and even they said, well, you know, we've got our own version of what really happened, but we're still not sure,
right.
which is a very artsy thing to say. But, sure. you know, yeah, so I played that. I played Baldur's Gate, Siege of Dragonspear, finally.
Mm-hmm.
And that was quite good. If you're a fan of Baldur's Gate, this is a game made for fans of Baldur's Gate. That's literally what it is. It's like they went, let's make a game that fans of Baldur's Gate will like. I mean, it starts the game off with a couple of quotes that are very quotable from the series. So I was like, okay, you know, I see what they're doing.
Mm.
But I liked it for that, you know. And I thought the pacing was very strong compared to the old Baldur's Gate games, which, as you know, I like very much. But I think the pacing is a little slow, a little off in those sometimes. The pacing in this was pretty good throughout the whole thing. And, yeah, they did some fun stuff that felt very modern and very nice, which I always like. You know, I'm looking forward to playing Full Throttle and seeing if they've made some things in there nice and modern, because there's some stuff in there that felt clunky.
Oh, I played the demo of Full Throttle Remastered at GDC.
Yes, you did.
I did, but I'll talk about that after you finish.
I remember you saying, at least, that the motorcycle combat felt more natural with the controller, which makes sense.
Yes, it does.
I played Hidden Folks.
Mm-hmm.
Which is literally Where's Waldo, but with puzzles now. So, you know, I mean, if it's one of those awful things to sum up where they go, if you like this, then you'll like this.
Yeah.
Which is a dumb way to sum things up.
But you don't have to take my word for it.
You do have to take my word for it.
Sorry, that's a reference you don't get.
Good. yeah, so that was a good one. And I'm trying to think. I think there's one more thing that I played that I want to talk about, but I can't remember what it is. So I guess I'll leave it there.
Okay. Was it Torment Tides of Numenera?
No, I haven't got that yet. Well, I mean, I've got it, but I haven't downloaded it yet.
Yeah.
Believe me, if I had that game, we would not be doing this podcast. That's just... There's some things in life that are just... That's just how it is.
Yeah, well.
Anyway.
Oh, right, so I was going to mention...
Throttle Remastered, which is out very soon.
I did, but I was also going to mention... Well, it's out in a month.
That is very soon.
I was also going to mention that the first panel of the day to start off the Game Narrative Summit was a panel called Everything's on Fire and No One Knows What to Do or something like that, and that wasn't really what the panel was about.
Was that a panel about you coding?
No, it was a panel about writing, actually. But it just so happened that everyone on the panel wrote for Torment Tides of Numenera, so that was kind of amusing.
I've heard some very interesting feedback about Torment. It sounds a lot like Planescape Torment fan game, which I'm all about.
Okay. So. Yeah. So I did play Full Throttle Remastered. The demo was very short, which, I mean, the game's very short, so...
Where did it end up?
So it starts off with a montage of scenes from the game. And then it starts off with Ben giving a monologue from the demo about, when you're on the road, or something. And then he's like, but it usually starts off with a lot of punching. And then he wakes up in the dumpster. And you basically do the kickstand thing. You,
poor old Toad.
Yeah, you get your keys. You get your keys back. You drive away. You do the very first motorcycle combat thing against the
Rottweiler.
Thank
Rottweiler.
You. Sorry. Call yourself a fan, and then the demo ends. So yeah, it's very short, but it gives a good feel for the game. So overall, I like the look of it. I think that the new 3D models of the bike fit in pretty nicely over the backgrounds, which I know a few people have complained about, but I think it looks nice. I couldn't really get a read on, you know, how it's changed or how it feels. Like, the motorcycle combat felt good, because obviously you use the left thumbstick to move the bike left and right, and you use the X button, I believe, to use your weapon, and I think one of the other buttons to cycle through them. So it's pretty easy, and I'm sure that the mine road's going to be the same, and I'm sure the demolition derby will probably be the same. You probably just have to tap one button to accelerate and one to reverse, and then just spin around with the stick. The verb coin using a controller is kind of weird because you have to, like, you have to use the left stick to kind of move the cursor around, which I've always thought is kind of strange. And then if you tap X, the verb coin comes up, and you can then use the directional pad to kind of snap to the different verb icons.
Snapping's good.
Yeah, I actually don't... Well, obviously there's no inventory puzzles at that point, so I didn't...
No.
I don't remember if I opened the inventory or not, but I would assume there's a
separate button. Well, that's the verb coin kind of...
Yeah, I mean, it's just if you right-click.
How they've done it.
Yeah. But yeah, there was a couple of things that I was a little iffy on, but not iffy, but just like my critical eye was like, so obviously they've gone for keeping the original frames of animation and everything. And as I've mentioned to you, like, I guess this is just something that I'm used to from AGS games, is that the LucasArts games, like, especially in Full Throttle, if you are walking left and then you click to the right and the character turns to walk in the other direction, they don't actually turn. They just go straight from their left walk cycle to their right walk cycle. There's no turn-tween, for lack of a better word. And Full Throttle does that, and I always thought it looks kind of strange now, being used to characters turning. And I just think it looks even stranger in high resolution.
It's never honestly bothered me. Like, you know, I guess it's noticeable, but usually I'm more about, I guess, speed. Like, yeah. I like stuff to happen fast, and I've been playing Broken Sword 1
a
bit recently, and it's a beautiful game, and the animations are incredible,
slowly, yes.
But they're slow. It's so slow.
Yeah, it is. But yeah. I thought that was part of the game's charm, to be honest. But anyway.
I don't know.
Yeah. The other thing was the animation...
It's not as bad as other games I've played.
That's true. The other thing is when Ben kicks the door down to the kickstand, his standing sprite and his, like, end of animation kicking sprite are off by, like, a significant number of pixels on the X and Y axis. So, as you know, when I do animations like that in AGS, I always fiddle like insanely to make sure that the sprites line up and stuff, and to see it not done kind of was like, oh no, why would you do that? So, but that's just me nitpicking at this point. The other thing was there was some kind of graphical like weirdness when the guy fell off his bike. Like, there was, you could still see him from behind, like the bike didn't have a walk behind, so you could still see him for like a split second. And but I mean, the little technical hiccups.
That's
like all that.
Little stuff.
And like, yeah, and plus the game, the demo said, oh well, you know, this is not the final thing, and this is just an alpha thing. So, you know, I'm hoping that they fix little things like that for the release.
Beta testing does a lot.
Yeah, exactly. And also, game I saw like two separate occasions people playing, and the game just froze for no reason. So. Okay. Yeah, that's a little concerning. But I'm sure James Spafford, a.k.a. Spaff, was hanging around, and someone was like, oh, we broke the game. He was like, oh, dear. Because that's Spaff. Anyway. Yes.
Yeah, I already pointed out the one thing that I was like, oh, really? Where they changed... There's a sign outside the kickstand where it has just cut off...
Oh, yeah.
It's fairly obvious that it's the Protocolor sign from later on. And then when you play, you see in that they've changed it to Pelly, which is not correct. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's, you know, but I was like, well, whatever.
You know where Protocolor comes from originally, by the way?
I don't.
You don't? Oh, well, LucasArts released a very obscure game on the Nintendo called Defenders of Dinatron City.
Oh, I never played Nintendo, you know that.
I do. I played Defenders of Dinatron City. I rented it, and it was kind of crappy. But Defenders of Dinatron City was interesting because it was a superhero game where you had five superheroes, and each one of them had their own little, like... You know how when you switch between characters in Day of the Tentacle, you get, like, that little intro theme that plays?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Defenders of Dinatron City did that exact same thing with each of their superheroes.
Okay.
So you had like a guy who was a hammerhead who was like a big strong guy who would just pound enemies with his hammerhead. You had another guy who had like a rocket head that would shoot out. You had Buzzsaw Girl who her feet were a giant buzzsaw. You had a monkey and a dog and yeah. So it was like a side-scrolling sort of open world-ish thing where you had to like run around the city and save it. But anyway, Proto Cola comes from that. That was like the fictional brand of cola.
Oh, I was going to say, how is any of this relevant?
Yeah.
Now I see.
Yeah, so now you know.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah, LucasArts' interesting foray into console games. Also with Zombies Ate My Neighbors. That was a fun one.
The only one I ever played was... I don't even know, that weird science fiction one that no one ever liked.
Was that on PS2?
Yeah, it was.
Was it Red Rock or whatever?
That's it. Red Rock, yeah. something. It was like a really extreme kind of name.
Didn't they also
ATX Red Rock or something crap like that?
Didn't they also make some sort of like gladiator game too?
Not that I ever played, but who knows? They made a lot of console games with all the Star Wars stuff, so you know.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, so I played Full Throttle Remastered. What else happened that was of interest at GDC? Because we're running long. We had the adventure party, which was fun. We had some, you know, old people in a tent. Old people. We did. I was there, so we had old people in attendance. yeah. No, we changed venues this year, which was nice. It's a little bit further out of the way, but it was it's a bar and it has space and it has a pool table, so it was nice for actually being able to have conversations with people and not having it be like what sort of thing.
Did Tim Schafer just play pool all night?
Tim Schafer did not come to the party, unfortunately. Now Tim Schafer's...
I remember that story from the Double Fine documentary about him playing pool too much.
Oh yeah, no, Tim Schafer.
And that game Critical Bug.
He's never come to the adventure party.
Okay.
But he was also hosting the IGF awards that night, so I would imagine that he probably had other things to do. But Agustin was there because
you didn't get to play on Thimbleweed Park, did you?
I didn't. They weren't showing Thimbleweed Park publicly, unfortunately. But that's fine because I've Thimbleweed Park is a game that I really want to go into blind and discover everything on.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Very soon. Very soon.
There was a couple of people, quite a few, actually three people from the Thimbleweed Park team there. Jen Sandercock being one of them, who's very nice.
Yep.
Also Australian. She was very kind in that she said, "Don't go down 6th Street after like 10 p.m. Our hotel was on 6th Street. So when she was like, "When you walk back to your hotel, just go up one of the other streets till you get to Market and then go down 6th Street because you don't want to go down 6th Street." I was like, "Okay, great, thanks."
Is it very busy at that time of night?
It's busy with homeless people, yes. It's not a very great neighborhood, but that's downtown San Francisco for you. Anyway, she was giving out Thimbleweed Park cards. And she said, "Here, take one." And I said, "All right, I'll take it." And I looked at it and I was like, "All right, cool." She was like, "Here, take two more." And I was like, "I will, but I don't want to look at them because I don't want to know anything about this game." So she's like, "All right, well, here, pick them at random, show them to me, and then you can keep them." And I'm like, "All right, fine." So I kept one. She's like, "Oh, that's a good one." And then I picked another one. She's like, "Oh, that's an even better one." And I was like, "Okay, good." And I still
it was like you're getting a tarot reading for your future.
Yeah, and so I still haven't looked at them. So I'm waiting until I play Thimbleweed Park to actually look at my souvenir Thimbleweed Park cards.
Well, it's good to wait. Then you get to experience it pure.
Yeah, but we had buttons. We had buttons at the adventure party this year because
Jake printed out and he put a photo. They were a very cool idea.
Jake Rodkin apparently, and I learned this from talking to Emily. Emily Morganti, she's a press PR person extraordinaire. She's got her fingers in like 30 adventure game pies and
that's
others.
Her thing. She does all the interviews over at Adventure Gamers, of course.
Yeah, and she also used to work for Telltale, so she knows everybody.
She was a PR person for them as well.
So she was telling me that Jake apparently has a thing about making buttons, and so he was very excited to be able to make buttons. And the original idea was that he was going to make buttons that said, "Ask me about the adventure party," in the style of Ask Me About Loom. But he ended up just making those cool buttons, which were cool anyway, of talk to several.
Clever idea, yeah.
Yeah, several talk to buttons. So I took about three of them, and then I gave one away to Erin Robinson when I saw her on the show floor, because she didn't come to the, she didn't even know there was an adventure party. I'll have to tell her next time. But anyway, yeah, the adventure party was cool. Agustin was there. Bill Tiller was there. I didn't really get to talk to him very much. David Fox was there, but I didn't really get to talk to him either.
Did you see what Bill Tiller tweeted the other day?
I did see what Bill Tiller tweeted the other day, and I thought it was a thing, but then I saw an article showing that he had actually put something on Facebook asking basically the same thing. So I was like, oh, well, I guess Bill Tiller really is asking for input.
Yeah. Yeah.
So good on
him. Who knows?
Yeah. But I got to speak with, I got to catch up with Andrew Goulding, which was cool, because I hadn't seen Andrew in a few years. He made MacGuffin's Curse and Jolly Rover, and he used to work on Hero U for a while.
You never played Jolly Rover, did you?
I didn't, and I still haven't played MacGuffin's Curse. I have it on my phone.
I've encouraged you to play Jolly Rover, because it's very good. Yeah. I enjoyed it a lot. Yeah.
But Andrew was telling me, because Andrew has moved to Seattle.
He has moved, yeah.
For the last few years. But apparently he still has a house in Melbourne. So he was telling me that his dream is to work for like 4 or 5 more years until he can finish paying off his house in Melbourne and then get the hell out of the U.S. and go back to Melbourne. And I said, that's probably a good idea. So I told him...
I wonder if he's ever going to sort of get back to try and make dream projects again.
I think he said that was kind of his intent as well. So...
Okay.
Because he says he... Yeah. Anyway, he's working for Amazon, I believe. And...
Oh.
Yeah, so he was like, I really want to just go back to being able to make games again. So I said, well, yeah, you should. That's good. But it was good. That's a
relatable ambition.
Yeah, I told him about our misadventures in Melbourne, and he seemed to enjoy hearing about the old days. And
we didn't really have any misadventures in Melbourne. Melbourne was quite tame.
Well, I was trying to make it sound exciting. Okay.
It wasn't. We got ranked on. That was the most interesting thing that happened.
Ouch! The National Gallery was cool.
Yeah, but I mean. That's not like an adventure. We looked at lovely paintings. That's not really a misadventure. That's just an outing.
Fine. Jeez. Anyway,
we did get very random.
I also told him about Bogan Baz, of course, because that's the thing. That's what I do. And then who else did I talk to? Oh, yeah, Ragnar Tornquist came along, which was nice. It was good to see him again and learn about his questionable practices of writing dialogue, which I won't get into, but I already told you about.
You did.
I did. Yeah, there was a lot of cool people. There was this one guy named Giles Armstrong, which is like the most English name you could ever think of.
Giles is a fantastic name.
Yeah, but Giles Armstrong, I mean, come on.
That's a good name. But see, when I think Armstrong now, I think of Americans. You had Louis, you had Neil.
Oh, I just think of Stretch.
Lance.
Stretch Armstrong. Lance. I guess.
Yeah, he's very American, though.
I just think of Magnus Armstrong from No One Lives Forever.
Yes, he's not English either.
No, he's not.
He's very much not English.
He's not, but whatever. Anyway, yeah, Giles was cool. He works for Tailspinners, which is a company in the UK, which actually Ian Thomas also works with. Ian Thomas being a cool guy that I saw at Adventure X talking about LARPing. I'm just name-dropping here like I always do. What an asshole. but anyway, aside from that, yeah, GDC was a lot of fun. Gene Mochi was there. It was good to see him.
Oh, Gene's a nice fellow.
It's always very... Gene is like the nicest guy. He told me that he wants to be in an FMV game. And I said, I hate FMV games, but if you're in one, I will make the exception and I will play it.
Because... Well, I mean, Gene does a lot of theatrical acting, and theatrical acting suits an FMV game.
He does. He mentioned he's doing a lot of... Yeah, he's doing a lot of acting these days.
That's what he mostly talks about.
Yeah, which is cool. My lips are chapped. Another thing that I did this year at GDC, which actually, let me give some advice for anyone who has never been or who wants to go as a speaker. go as a speaker because they take care of you like crazy. Not only do they give you a pass, an all-access pass, so you get to actually see everything, they give you a concession card, which has a $75 credit on it, which means you can basically buy any food that you want in the conference hall. Granted, it is shitty, like, conference hall food, but there's a few good things. Like, there's a crepe stand that's pretty good. But yeah, you can get free lunch or whatever food you want at the time at the conference hall. There's also a speaker lounge, which you can go into whenever you feel like it, and they have bagels in the morning and coffee and tea, and even better, they bring in cookies at 3 o'clock. So I had a lot of cookies.
I'm sure all of our listeners will take your advice and go as speakers next year.
I'm sure they will. Well, maybe if at least one person does, then I'll feel happy. How's that?
I don't want to belittle your wisdom,
but
and your influence, but I feel like there would be greater factors at play.
Well,
giving talks at GDC than you saying, "Hey, there's cookies."
Well,
just
like, you know, what?
Like everything.
What are you talking about? The cookies are the best part. I would go back and speak at GDC just for the cookies. Or at least
you can make cookies like literally downstairs from you with the one-eyed cat bodega.
Make friends with someone who speaks at GDC so you can get free cookies at GDC.
You can get cookies anyway, Francisco.
Yeah, well, but not for free. Free things taste so much better.
Visit anyway. A friend and eat their cookies. That's free.
That's rude. That's stealing.
No, when you go to visit someone, they're like, "Oh, let's have some tea," and they bring the cookies out. Okay, I visit my grandma every Thursday. My life is cookies.
You're a cookie freeloader from your grandmother.
She loves giving me cookies. She always sends some home with me. I'm like,
Anyway,
I'm not a cookie freeloader. That's just how grandmas are. I don't go there for the cookies. I go there for the grandmother. Cookies are just a nice side effect.
Well, that's fine. All right. Well, anyway, another thing that I did that I've never really done a lot at GDC was they always have a shut up and sit down area where they just have a bunch of board games. Mm. And so I got to play some board games, which were a lot of fun. And it's a nice little break from the general nonsense of GDC. And actually, the last day go ahead.
I imagine that multiple days of that level of interaction with that many people, you welcome a quiet break.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I took it easy this year. I didn't go out late. Like, the latest I stayed out, I think, was the night of the speaker party. When I went to, afterwards, I went to the Golden Gate Tap Room, which is kind of like where all the game narrative people end up hanging out. And I think I got home at like 1 o'clock that night. But that was the latest I stayed out. I was getting up at like 6:30 every morning, which is unusual for me. Although if you consider that if it was 9:30 on East Coast time, it's not that unusual.
That's about normal for you.
Yeah. But yeah, the games were fun. And a friend of mine from here from New York, Brian, was helping run the thing. And on the last day when I was there playing, Tim Schafer was actually there playing this game called Innis, which is a Viking, like, it looks like Settlers of Catan, sort of, but more, it's very pretty. The artwork is very nice. And it has to do with Vikings. And afterwards, I still had money to spend on my concession card. So I was like, "Hey, Brian, let's go have lunch." And he was like, "All right, cool." So I was like, "Hey, how is it? Are you and Tim Schafer like buddy-buddy now?" He's like, "No, Tim Schafer hates me. I was like blocking every one of his moves and he was getting really angry." I was like, "Oh, well."
Well,
so it's pretty fun.
Play to win, no matter who you're playing against.
It's true. It's true. You really do. So, yeah. Yeah, I think that's pretty much all the GDC stories I've got. Everything else. Okay. Is probably, I mean, most of this was probably of no interest to our listeners, but everything else would be of even less interest.
Standard podcast, then.
True. Everything else would be of even less interest to our listeners, so there's
that.
Fair
enough.
There were some good narrative talks. Adventure games are still not mainstream, I guess. I didn't really get much of a chance to go on the expo floor, actually. I looked at the IGF games, and I didn't play any, but I sort of glimpsed at them. There was a very pretty one called An Old Man's Journey.
Yeah, I've been following that one quite a bit, and I really like the way it looks.
Is it an adventure game?
Well, I think it's got elements of adventure.
Well, sure, everything's got elements of it.
I mean, it's easy to say that adventure games aren't mainstream still, but you got to remember we've got Thimbleweed Park coming out, we've got Full Throttle Remastered coming out. It's a good time to be an adventure gamer still. We've got Paradigm very soon.
Yep.
You know, there's still great stuff. You know, if you're into Mage's Initiation, that's probably coming out this year.
Yeah.
You know, these are big projects coming to fruition, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's still some interest. I know Dave met with a bunch of press for Unavowed. He rented a room.
Yeah.
And I had a few interviews about Lamplight City. So, yeah, there's still some interest in adventure games, I think. So
absolutely.
Yeah, good. Well, good. This has been a podcast. I think we should wrap up. I have to go to the bathroom.
But it's probably best that we wrap up then. Don't use or explode.
Let's not, because if I explode, you're going to come and find a very terrible mess here when you visit me soon.
Correct.
Right, well, good. Let's not get into details. Let's end this podcast quickly while we're still in the realm of good taste. Well, maybe not anymore. Anyway.
You can find Francis.
Oh, yeah, right. Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm at Grundislav Games. You can find Benjamin at
Furfur.
And together we are at BCT_podcast. Hey, you know what? The next couple of podcasts we do, we'll actually be able to say that in time for real. So that's exciting.
I just plan on eating bagels and passing out in your apartment. There's not going to be much talking.
Oh, okay. Good. All right. Sorry. Bye.
Bye.